La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to the premiere of TritonCast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. I'm Jeff Toriel.
And I'm Jenny Stevens. In today's Triton Spotlight, we've got longtime UC San Diego Athletics Director Earl Edwards, who has a career of over 40 years in athletics administration, including the last 20 as an AD here. We get his thoughts on the movement to end social injustice in our society with an interesting comparison to the civil rights movement in the 1960s. Earl also chats about the transition to Division I and what he considers to be his biggest accomplishments in his time with the Tritons.
But first, let's go around campus. Division I is here. As of July 1st, UC San Diego Athletics is a member of the Big West Conference and NCAA Division I. And if you head over to our website at ucsdtritons.com, we'll take you around the conference as we get to know our competition and our other Big West Conference colleagues. That series will run beginning today, July 1st, all the way through July 15th. Also now appearing on the website is season 2 of our popular Between Two Zoom series, where we catch up with coaches, scholar athletes, and administrators about their time away from campus and their anxiousness, as we all are, to return to campus in La Jolla.
You definitely won't want to miss that. Now, here's our conversation with UC San Diego Athletics Director Earl Edwards.
Earl, so much has gone on in our country since the murder of George Floyd back on Memorial Day. And in the last 6 weeks, there's been so much activism in our country and around the world. How can you equate that, or can you equate that, to kind of the civil rights movement as you were growing up?
Oh, there's no question that I can equate it to the civil rights movement when I was growing up. Because as you know, during that time period, there was a lot of marches and protesting going on. And we had the blessing at that time to have a great leader, Martin Luther King, who's one of my idols. So I saw those things, I experienced those things, and it was a very important time in our history. And to me, a lot of this is somewhat of a video replay, for lack of a better term, with the civil rights and protesting that's going on currently. The big difference I see now is that the protesting and focus on racial inequality seems to be in the forefront for all people, not just those that have been victimized, which has been the case in the past.
So seeing that, is that an encouraging sign that while progress was certainly made in the 1960s, there's obviously been and continues to be such a long way to go, but does that give you hope that this time the changes may be more radical and longer lasting?
Yeah, I've got a lot of hope that it's maybe longer lasting and more systematic across the board. I say that not only because of the continuing marching and protesting. I think we're into 20 some odd days now. So not only with the continuing aspect, but just having more conversations about it across the board, particularly in the athletic arena. I'm proud to be a member of the athletic community because all of us are taking a very pro-activist approach to making the change. So I feel much more confident. I've already seen some signs, it may be a small sign, but it's a big sign in this context, in that the NCAA put out a notification that tomorrow, Juneteenth, is a day that the office is going to celebrate. That's the day of independence for slavery. So that, I think without question that we're in a much different place, and I'm happy to do my part and see where we end up.
As the leader of the athletics department, shortly after the Floyd murder specifically, and when the protests began and the focus on Black Lives Matter, you called a town hall meeting with the scholar athletes in the department to talk about issues of race and racial injustice. What prompted you to schedule that meeting and what came out of it?
Well, that's a great question. And in regards to what prompted me was the, as I watched George Floyd being murdered, and unfortunately, I had to watch another one recently with Rayshon Brooks being shot in the back. But when I saw George Floyd being murdered, not only was it painful, I was angered, frustrated, but that was the turning point for me to say, okay, that's it. I'm no longer going to be silent in my role as the athletic director and my role as a person that has a sphere of influence. We're going to talk about race, and we're going to start it now, which is why I started with the town hall meeting to get a better sense of the experience of our athletes, particularly athletes of color, on our campus and within our program. So the impetus was really, unfortunately, the murder of George, where I just felt I have to use my voice and platform to speak up against racial injustice.
As a Black man and the leader of this athletics department, what do you consider your role to be in the current social climate? And what can sports, broadly speaking, do to promote and facilitate meaningful change?
You know, as far as my platform as a Black administrator in athletics, I certainly would like my platform to recognize the things that we've accomplished in athletics under my leadership. But I would say when it's all said and done, if we can make some significant strides in addressing social injustice and racial inequality within our program and on the campus, when it's all said and done, that's the area I'd be most proud of to hang my hat on, because when I look at athletics, and I say it often, and that is that athletics is more than games and competition. Athletics can be used as a change agent as we move forward. So as a Black leader, I actually feel that this is a platform that I would be very proud of and feel that it really makes a difference in the lives of those that are involved in our program and in the lives of those that may be impacted by individuals in our program. So I feel very good about using athletics as a platform for social change.
And in the time since these protests began, we've seen so many UC San Diego scholar athletes using their voice on their own social media platforms to make statements and to push for change. How can athletics as a whole lead to meaningful change or be a part of meaningful change within the UC San Diego community?
Well, I think there's a couple of areas. One would be we certainly have a different platform in terms of the exposure regionally, locally, nationally, the TV platform. So our voice is clearly a major factor in terms of how we can change the campus. The second thing I would say, as we come up with different activities or programs or initiatives to address racial equality and social injustice, we can become a model for the campus. I already know just from speaking to individuals and the article that was in the Union that by people recognizing that our mission as a program is to address racial inequality, that a lot of individuals have jumped on board in terms of supporting us. They hear the message. They're doing some introspection of their own biases. So I think athletics, because of the platform itself, we just have tremendous opportunities to touch on a lot of different constituencies that we're engaged with.
We're chatting with UC San Diego Athletic Director Earl Edwards on the premiere episode of TritonCast. It's been, to say the least, 2020 has been a very interesting year. A few months ago, it seems like an eternity ago, the sports world and the whole world essentially stopped with the rapid spread of COVID-19, and that pandemic has wreaked havoc, not just our society, but again, the entire globe. Drilling down to an athletics perspective, obviously competitions were stopped and the spring quarter instruction was remote at UC San Diego. What has that experience been like for you as a leader?
It's been challenging without question, but it's actually been a good experience in terms of we've now moved into this virtual world, which I think many of us were somewhat familiar, but not as engaged as we are now, which I think for most of us has taught us another way to communicate. I've been involved with a lot more communication with different groups through the Zoom process. There seems to be more frequency with those different meetings, whether it's coaches, staff, athletic administrators, donors, and all of those opportunities have provided me with more insight in terms of what's happening across the board. So while it's been demanding, I would also say that, often when you talk about being tired, it's frequently in terms of being physically tired. The mental aspect of virtual Zooming frequently for months now, that's mentally draining. So that's been a challenge. But as far as business moving along, doing the things that we need to do to be ready for a move to Division I and become a member of the Big West, I feel really good about where we are, even during this virtual environment.
It certainly was an adjustment to not coming into the office and onto campus every day and working remotely. How long did it take you to kind of settle in personally and get a rhythm with, working from your kitchen table or your bedroom or wherever you might be in your home?
Yeah, I work from my office at home, and I'm going to say it probably took me a good 2 or 3 weeks before I became really comfortable with it, just worrying about the technology, whether it's going to work right or not, or understanding that I need to unmute myself if I wanted to speak, and the video aspect, and the chat rooms and all those things. It took me a couple of weeks to finally get to a point where I said, okay, I got it. So I feel very comfortable, working in this environment now. But while I feel comfortable, I am anxiously awaiting to get back on campus and actually engage with our scholar athletes and some of our staff. And I only say some of our staff because I know when we do go back in the fall, it won't be like it was in the past, that there'll be some individuals that won't be back on campus.
I know there are plans being worked on and revised all the time about what the return to campus might look like in terms of scholar athletes as well as department staff and ultimately, hopefully, playing games. Information is changing constantly. So how much varies from one day to the next as far as, okay, this is what I'm thinking might happen or this is how we might approach that situation? Because again, every day there's new data and science is giving us more information. And so how do you kind of keep up with all of that?
Well, I've been blessed that I think in the athletic community, we do a great job of sharing information. So whether it's during with the D1 ticker or whether it's the NCAA. Just, you know, I have to do a lot of reading, and quite frankly, I'm getting up earlier in the morning to allow myself that time to do that. So, you know, doing those things at 5 and 6 in the morning is a fairly common practice now. But the other part that I've done as I read these things, as you indicated, is to recognize that things are constantly evolving. So what I read today may not be appropriate for tomorrow. So that just helps me to, you know, not get fixed in on whatever's being discussed, because I know it might change. My hope is for us in particular, by the time we get to our scholar athletes returning on campus in early August, that there'll be a lot more consistency in terms of what we're doing and how we're going to do it.
I want to go back to early March, or I guess maybe that was mid-March, when COVID first hit and the NCAA canceled all of its winter and spring championships. And ultimately that led to UC San Diego's spring seasons and winter seasons that were in progress to varying degrees to come to an end. Kind of when that first all happened and suddenly the entire staff was working remotely and the scholar athletes returned home for spring quarter instruction, what was your message to the department at that time?
Really, it was just, we need to be patient, flexible, and resilient, and just take it one day at a time, and really to communicate with them as much as we can as we found out what's taking place with the NCAA or on campus and how that impacts us as an athletic program. I need to mention here that I've been extremely fortunate that with a lot of that communication and reaching out to our staff and others on a daily basis was taken care of by our deputy director, Wendy Taylor-May, which was a great help to me, because while Wendy's focusing on the campus and the athletic program, which we should, I not only was focusing on that, but also focusing on what's happening in the Big West Conference as the athletic director and what changes are going on from a conference perspective. I'm also very much involved with upper administration on some of the things that's happening. So that's allowed me to work on those other areas outside of athletics. So yeah, really the communication is be flexible, patient, and be strong.
We'll chat in a minute about the transition to Division I and the move to the Big West Conference and all the excitement that comes with that. We'll get into that in a little bit. But want to go back to and chat about your career a little bit. And at what point did you know you wanted to be an athletic director? And was that always a goal of yours?
That's a great question. It wasn't an immediate goal. But when I was working for Judy Sweets as her associate and athletic director many years ago, I was fortunate to learn a lot from her in terms of her leadership style. We were a Division III program at that time. She was involved in the NCAA quite a bit, so I had the pleasure and honor of running the department while she was doing things for the NCAA. And as I said, I learned a lot from her. And as a result of that education and being in charge of the program on a frequent basis, after a couple of years of experience, I decided, okay, I'm ready to run my own program thanks to her mentorship and the things I learned. So really it was after working here as the number two person with Judy Sweet several years ago that I decided I'm ready to be in charge of my own program.
and your path to that ultimate goal was not exactly direct. You've had several stops along the way. Kind of take us through your move from one place to the next.
Yeah, my career path. That's like, how far back do you want to go? I'll start off with the beginning of my career was actually more focused on the recreation intramural side. So I was the intramural, the director of intramurals at the University of Massachusetts. Had a similar position at the University of Michigan. And then when I left Michigan, I got more into the athletic side of the house. So I was doing recreation, serving as a business manager for athletics, as well as teaching phys ed. So I had a cross-pollination of a number of different sport activities. And then after I was at Drexel for several years, I really decided that I wanted to focus on the athletic arena. So that's when I reached out to Judy Sweet and became her assistant. And then from then on, it's been all on the athletic side. So it's been a good journey, a mixture of recreation, physical education, teaching, athletics as far as business manager and facilities, coaching a little bit at UMass. So I've got a plethora of experiences on the athletic side of the arena.
When you got that experience at UMass specifically and working in recreation and coaching, was that while you were attaining your master's or after that?
Good question. It was after I received my master's. I received my master's in sport administration. And at that time, there was only about four or five schools in the country that offered a degree in sport administration, either on the undergrad or graduate level. Now there's 180 or plus. But so I got my master's, got hired in the recreation department as a intramural director, and then I worked with the men's basketball team as a graduate assistant position, even though I was full-time employee. In fact, when I was working there, Rick Pitino was our point guard for UMass, and Julius Irvin had graduated just a year before, so I had some contacts with him. So that's, it was right after I received my master's.
You attended undergrad at East Stroudsburg. What drew you there?
Well, I was a basketball player at which now is Staten Island College. It was a JUCO then, now it's a four-year school. And I basically was recruited by East Stroudsburg. I got a scholarship to attend East Stroudsburg as a basketball player. And what I liked about East Stroudsburg, and I don't know the exact numbers, but you'll get the sense. And what I liked about East Stroudsburg was that as a physical education major at that time in the school, probably 50% of the student population or more were phys ed majors. That was something that they were really known for. So that was extremely appealing to me, because originally my first objective in life, really, when you talk about working, was to become a physical education teacher. But that never played out because I was offered the job at UMass Amherst just before I graduated. So that's where I stayed on the college level. But East Stroudsburg was a great experience. It was 2 hours away from home, but the difference in the environment, I used to say it was 2 hours away in distance, but a thousand miles away in terms of environment and culture. It was very different.
Having spent some time in that part of the country, I can certainly relate to what you're saying there. You grew up on Staten Island, correct?
Yes, I grew up on Staten Island, which is why I went to JUCO on Staten Island, and obviously went to high school there. So I played basketball and baseball and ran track. So one of those multi-sport athletes. But Staten Island was my, is where I grew up.
And born in Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. How old were you when you moved to the New York area?
Yeah, I was born in Selma, Alabama, and I left there when I was one. So I didn't grow up there. But on the other hand, I did frequently go back there during the summer. So I saw a lot of the segregation, civil rights movements. And that was tough growing up to see that environment, particularly an environment like that where you would drive 18 hours to get there and suddenly you were a third class, maybe even lower citizen, and then you can drive back to New York and be in a different position in terms of being able to eat in restaurants, going to certain hotels, all the things we take for granted that we were allowed to do those. And once we went back to New York.
Is that something as a family that you talked about or you remember having discussions about at that time as to why it was the way it was?
Oh yeah, without question, because to be driving down, a good example would be driving down to Alabama. We make a stop in Mississippi. We go into a restaurant, not recognizing exactly what's happening, but we go into the restaurant, everybody gets quiet. Somebody comes over and tells us that if we want to eat there, we have to go to the back of the restaurant. So we leave. So those situations forced a lot of conversation, or going to a store downtown in Alabama and seeing two water fountains. One says white only, the other says colored only. So yeah, those conversations were frequent, and they were also a big part of my mother and father's emphasis on education. You need to get an education so that you're in a position where you don't necessarily have to experience that type of discrimination.
Amazing to think back on that time and just how different things were, and thankfully have evolved at least to where they are now. Again, knowing that there's still so much more to do. Is that part of why your family and your parents, why you moved to the New York area, or at least out of Selma?
Oh yeah, without question, because there was, between the discrimination, lack of job opportunities, and when I say discrimination there, I've just talked to you about some of the visual social, but we're talking about an environment where, blacks were lynched for, looking at a white woman, or blacks were, shot and hunted down like dogs. Yeah, that was an ugly period for us. So to get out of there as quickly as we could, and I'm the oldest in our family, so I can understand my mother and father saying, hey, we've got us dealing with it is one thing. We now have a child. There's no way we want him to experience, or any of their children to experience, the things that they went through. So yeah, that was a big impetus for us to move to New York.
Do you still have family in that area now?
Not as much. There's a handful of many of my relatives, which is typical of blacks during the time I was born. Many of those relatives left for the north, northeast and Midwest. So there's more of my relatives up in the Michigan, Ohio, Chicago area as a result of that defection from the South.
We're chatting with UC San Diego Director of Athletics Earl Edwards on TritonCast. I want to go back to how you came to UC San Diego, and you mentioned working with Judy Sweet and what a great experience that was, but how did you get to UC San Diego?
Well, I believe at the time I was working at Drexel University. I'm pretty sure it was Drexel or could have been UMass. And all I know is wherever I was working at the time, it was a cold environment. I mean, like really cold environment. And I'm not a big fan of the cold. So I literally just said, I need to go somewhere where it was warm. Always had the desire to check out California, because if you're an East Coast person, the images of California with the sunshine all the time, the beaches, it was always encouraging to check it out. So once I said, okay, I want to go to a warm climate and check out California, I noticed that UC San Diego had a position in the athletic department. It was the number two position, associate AD. It was Division III, so I believe, so even though I was at a Division I program, the two main reasons I left to come to San Diego was what I mentioned about the environment. But when I did my research on Judy Sweet, who was very much a high-profile individual involved with the NCAA. In fact, she became the president of the NCAA during her career, and I was working for her during that time. But her resume spoke to me in that this is a person I can be around and learn some things as far as becoming an AD down the road. So there's a combination of wanting to get away from the freaking cold that I was getting tired of, and the fortunate timing of a position being available at UC San Diego.
So you come to La Jolla and you're working on campus and the school athletic lead Division III at that time. What was the process to move to Division II? And at that time, was Division I the ultimate goal or not necessarily?
Well, that's a great question, because when I moved out here and we were a Division III program, it was a program that had a lot of financial issues to deal with, i.e., believe it or not, all of our coaches were part-time coaches, no full-time coaches. Head coaches and assistant coaches were making what we would consider a stipend now, somewhere in the $14,000 to $15,000 range, with no, not a lot of support as far as assistant coaches. So during that time, we were an independent Division III program. We were extremely successful, and we virtually found ourselves in a spot where the other Division III schools that were in conferences really didn't want to take us in their conference because we were much larger. And then they also were moving towards not scheduling us because we were so successful. So the impetus to move to Division II was somewhat being forced out of Division III, and we needed a conference, and the CCAA was a conference that was willing to take us. So we made the move to Division II. And when we made the move, I actually was gone because I was at East Stroudsburg as the athletic director, and I came back when we made the move to Division II as the athletic director. Once we got involved at the Division II level, no scholarships. Eventually, we got scholarships. Then it became clearer in the last 7 or 8 years that we should be a division program because of our size and the lack of commonality that we had with the Division III schools that we were engaging in. So the CCAA made more sense because of the higher level of competition and the fact that they wanted us in their league. It was why we moved to D2. And then eventually the students basically wanted us to move to Division I because of our size and the competition and things along those lines.
we'll talk a little bit more about the actual move to Division One in a minute, but I want to hit on something you said. You were here, you were working for Judy, and wheels were in motion to move to the CCAA in Division Two. Mm-hmm. And somewhere at that time you left and you were the AD at East Stroudsburg. I guess you wanted to give the cold one more try. And then the opportunity arose at UC San Diego in the spring of 2000. And that's when you left to come back to UCSD. Yeah.
Yes. And while I went back to the cold, that was more of a, I need to get AD experience. While I liked the warm weather and I wanted to stay here, I didn't have the sense that Judy Sweet was going to leave at any time. So, it, you know, in your career, you have to make those decisions as to what's best for you to advance your career. So I went back to East Stroudsburg as the AD for 7 years. It's worked out nice because I got a lot of experience at the Division II level when I came back in 2000.
What did you learn as AD at East Stroudsburg that was able to give you the confidence or the skills needed to apply and ultimately become the athletic director at UC San Diego?
Well, a lot of it just had to do with the leadership you need to provide to your staff and coaches. So between the communication with coaches, communications with staff, getting engaged with facilities, enhancing our facilities, which needed it, getting some fundraising experience, which is always helpful as an athletic director. But just the main experience of being in charge of the program in all aspects and getting a taste of that. So whether it's the staffing, fundraising, facilities, engaging with the community, corporate partnerships, all of those things that an athletic director gets involved with, I got those experiences at East Stroudsburg.
When you first got to East Stroudsburg and you're back in Northeast Pennsylvania and you got the job and you're first on site, was it overwhelming at first, kind of thinking, where do I start? What do I do first?
That's a good question. It was overwhelming in the sense of, you know, when you're an assistant or associate, often you have certain areas that you focus on. When you become the athletic director, you need to have a good sense of what's happening across the board. So the first thing is to learn the organizational structure. That's where I started to see who's doing what and where they fit in the organizational structure. Then the next thing was to sit down with the staff individually and coaches to talk to them about their programs and how that works. So it's a lot of information gathering, but when you start a position, there's things that you need to address right away. Also talked somewhat about my style and expectation as a leader, and that I'm not a micromanager. I expect the people that are working to be somewhat experts in their areas. Obviously, I'm going to provide some oversight. Also talk about things about how you expect the coaches to treat their athletes. So one of the first things I did there, as well as here at UC San Diego, was to essentially say that there'll be no Bobby Knights on my staff. You can get the message across, but the bottom line is you don't have to use foul language. You can be respectful. So those are some of the things you jump into right away. I think the biggest challenge in any time you take on a new position is really trying to not just understand the organization, but get a good sense of the people that you have in those various positions and get a sense as to their expertise, their professionalism. I'm really big on trying to have people that have relatively good or strong interpersonal skills. In fact, I use that as probably as big a criteria when I hire people beyond their job responsibilities that they bring, but what kind of personality that they that they have. So strong interpersonal skills is a big part of what I look at.
Spring of 2000, you're hired as the athletic director at UC San Diego. So you come back home to La Jolla. When you left, was it your goal to come back here, or did this opportunity just present itself?
I'm laughing when you ask me that question, because when I left, I said to myself, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get back to San Diego, but I know I'm going to get back. So whether it's retirement or whatever, I know I'm going to get back to San Diego. And lo and behold, I had an opportunity not only to come back, but to come back in the position that I was hoping for. And, you know, even though it was a Division II program, I'll be candid that when I was at East Stroudsburg, and my goal was when I left there to go to a Division I program. But when UC San Diego offered me the position, it was a chance to get back to San Diego. I also felt that UC San Diego was clearly a university that I could potentially take to the Division I level because of our size and the other things that we had to offer that was more in line with the Division I programs.
So where did that priority, ultimately moving from Division II to Division I, where did that fall into your kind of priority list when you first arrived back on campus? Because this at the time was the first year of Division II. I mean, the school had just moved from D3 to D2 at that time.
Yeah, that's another great question. I'll be honest, when I came here in 2000 with the idea that, you know, when I left East Stroudsburg, that I was going to, my next move would be for a D1 program. So when I came in 2000, right off the bat, I started thinking about the things that we need to do to become a Division I program. So really that was a, 17, 18, 19 year process for me to get us to where we are now. So in 2000, I started looking at the structure of our staff and that how we were doing business, and was fortunate to start increasing our staff structure with the idea that when we moved to Division I, knowing that we would have to add to that structure, but we wouldn't have to add 40 people. Maybe we would have to add, I don't know, 15, 20 to put it in perspective, so to make it less of a challenge. So really the thought of us moving to Division I, and for me, was from the start in 2000.
And what was the actual process like? I mean, at the end of the day, it took almost 20 years for the school to be accepted and now be a part of Division I. But I know it was a process getting students and faculty on board across campus. What was that bridge building like, and how'd you go about it?
There's so many things there. I'm not sure where to start, but I'm going to start with the financial piece. We first needed to get to a place where we were somewhat financially stable. And I still can't believe this in retrospect, but when I took the position in 2000, we roughly had a $2 or $3 million budget that was mostly temporary funds. So we had to address the financial piece relatively soon. And shortly after I got there, there was a small referendum that got us to a more stable place. I think it got us to a point where we had a budget of maybe $5 or $6 million to do what we needed to do. So the financial piece was first. The second piece was, it was clear that the university was not going to provide the funds to make a move to a Division I, and that it would be a student-driven initiative, because in California, as you well know, a lot of our programs are funded, at least partially funded, by student fees. So the next step was to seize the opportunity from a student-driven perspective, where they were interested in moving to Division I, and they were also willing to create a fee to help us do that. once we got the students on board to do that, the fee aspect, then the next process was to convince the faculty. So after the fees, well, we met with the faculty to explain why we wanted to move to Division One, and basically there were five or six factors involved in that. One was to have the athletic program reflect the culture of excellence that we have on campus. Thus, we should be competing at the highest level. The other was to enhance the school spirit on our campus, because we have six colleges at that time. Now it's going to be seven, and they all have their own intricacies and culture, and there's not as much of a spirit, a unifying approach on campus, and athletics could do that. Also talked about alumni engagement, how we can connect with the alumni as a result of moving to Division One, the branding and marketing aspect, how we can tell our story on a regional, local, and national scale with the production. And then the other piece was the connection to the community as a whole. And all of those things were things that the university was seriously lacking in. And to be able to enhance those areas by having a Division One program was something that the faculty bought into, and three quarters of the faculty that voted at that time supported us. So between the students and that, those were the two factors that helped us to get to where we are today.
But on top of all that, there's an NCAA requirement that didn't used to exist, but it certainly did by this time, that in order to make the jump to Division One, you had to be admitted to a conference. Yes. So in other words, you couldn't go in as an independent, as schools used to be able to do. So why the Big West? Why was that the right fit? And you know, how did those conversations go, and how did that come about?
Well, the Big West to me was a perfect fit, and I'm actually glad that it became a requirement to have a conference, because trying to survive as an independent and intercollegiate athletics is a major challenge and hurdle. And I'm glad we didn't have to experience that, because independent to university as it states, you don't have the ability to schedule a lot of games because you're in a conference. So by joining the Big West, we've moved out of a conference that was primarily state schools. In fact, by the time we left, they were all state schools. So we didn't have a lot in common with those schools from a university perspective. The Big West is a league that out of 11 schools, five are UC schools. Obviously, we're in that mix. And five are state schools that are also in California. And then the outlier is the University of Hawaii. But if you're going to be in a conference and have an outlier, I think Hawaii is a good one to have.
Absolutely.
So you're competing in California or Hawaii from a conference perspective. So it was a great fit for us. It also, I think, will enhance the school spirit, because we'll be competing against other academic, high academic institutions like the other UCs and some of the state schools. So there'll be much more of a commonality. I think the student population, as well as the community as a whole, can identify a lot more with the UC and state schools than they can with the state schools. So that makes it more of an attraction. So the Big West was actually a perfect fit for us. In fact, as I looked at joining the Big West, and obviously there's more expenses involved, but the one area where it's not quite as expensive, which normally doesn't happen when you switch conferences, is the travel or transportation piece, because in the Division II conference, CCAA, we were traveling, and you know, from San Diego all the way up to Humboldt with a lot of plane flights. The Big West Conference is primarily a bus league, you know, Central California and south with a few exceptions. So that's convenient for us and attractive as well.
When the referendum was passed on campus, and we mentioned that, you know, by NCAA rule, we would have to find a home in Division I in terms of a conference before the NCAA would be willing to grant the move. Was that an easy conversation? I mean, clearly from everything you just told us, it made a lot of sense from UC San Diego's perspective to want to join the Big West. But was that a matter of you calling their commissioner, Dennis Farrell, and saying, hey, Dennis, let us in? Or what was the conversation on the Big West side to make that happen?
Well, as I indicated earlier, I always wanted to move to Division I. And once the NCAA established that you had to have a conference, I talked to Dennis Farrell. And Dennis Farrell, like many of the ADs too, they were all very familiar with UC San Diego, and they were very excited and encouraging about the possibility of being a member of the conference. And what we bring to the conference, and two things, there's a number of things, but the two major things right off the bat are our academic reputation, which is worldwide recognition, and then to be a California conference and not have the San Diego market was a big gap, if you will, for the Big West Conference. So to bring, now we've got LA, I mean, they've had LA, but you got LA and San Diego, two major media markets to be part of the conference. So that they were very much excited about the potential of becoming a member.
On a personal level, what excites you the most about not just the Big West Conference, but, you know, hey, now we're with the big boys. We're a Division I school.
What excites me the most is that we've been extremely successful at the Division III level, consistently in the top 10, if you will, Director's Cup. Moved to Division II without scholarships, eventually had scholarships, extremely successful at the Division II level, consistently in the top 10 in the Learfield Director's Cup, often in the top 5. And when I look at moving to the Big West, which is a non-football conference, there's a level of Division I, non-football, that I feel that we could continue to be extremely successful moving forward. So I'm expecting that looking at that level of Division I non-football, that when we become full members in 24, that we'll be competing for conference championships on a regular basis. And, once you do well on the conference level with championships, then you're more engaged with the NCAA aspect. And with that, almost anything can happen. But I'm excited about being extremely successful at Division I non-football. And we need to probably emphasize that more, because I think some individuals, when you think of Division I, you automatically think of the Dukes and the North Carolinas and the USCs, and that's not the level that we see ourselves being competitive in across the board. But within the non-football environment, we can be extremely successful.
We're in our final few moments with UC San Diego Athletics Director Earl Edwards on TritonCast. You've been athletic director for 20 years now, and obviously spent a good deal of time on campus prior to that as an associate AD. What makes UC San Diego such a special place?
Well, where do you want me to start? I'll start with the things that I tell people, the athletes that I meet with in terms of recruiting. First off is that it's a phenomenal world-class university. When you look at the academic achievements that we've accomplished, and particularly when you look at those within the short time that we've been a university where we would be considered a baby by most standards. So we're only 60 plus years old, and we're still, ranked as a world-class university. So that's one aspect, and that's going to continue. Obviously, we're in, say, San Diego, which is a very special place from an environment perspective. You know, the university, I've talked about the world-class success, but, you know, athletically, we've had a lot of success, as I just described, at the Division III and II level. We've been fortunate to athletically have a number of outstanding coaches that have helped us with this success. The academic requirements of the individuals that we attract from a scholar-athlete perspective are such that these are, for the most part, somewhat elite scholars as well. So that makes us special. The campus has done a lot of things in the area of moving forward to make our campus more inclusive. We have a vice chancellor for equity, diversity, inclusion that we didn't have before. We have six community centers on our campus where most places might have two or three, and those community centers are a great way for us to partner up with and other students to take advantage. We're just a innovative, creative, pioneer university in a lot of things that we do. And athletics is also a part of that creativity and innovation, looking at some of the things we're doing moving forward.
No question, athletically, in addition to the move to Division I, which is an obvious major accomplishment and something certainly to be proud of. In your time, the athletics has opened new facilities for baseball, including that facility and that spectacular clubhouse, the softball facility, the Spanos Athletic Performance Center, updates to the track and field complex with a new scoreboard, updates to RE/MAC Arena, which continue. Yep. Is there anything in that list or that I didn't mention that you're maybe most proud of?
I'm really proud of all of those things when you put it together. But if I was going to pick one, and I'm really proud of all of them because they all have significant impact on who we are and what we're trying to do. But if I was going to pick one, it would have to be the baseball complex, because that was the one complex that was almost embarrassing. No, I won't even say almost. It was embarrassing to have as a part of our program. And I say that because the clubhouse, if you will, was a double wide facility that was somewhat dilapidated and should have been condemned. We didn't have any outside restrooms, so we were using porta potties, which was a challenge every time we had a contest, because there'd always be a parent to find me to tell me about how they hated the porta potties. The bleachers were old wooden bleachers, so they weren't up to standards. The backstop was the normal chain link fence with big poles that obstructed vision. So if I was going to pick one, I'd say baseball, just because it was so such a bad facility across the board that to get that to where it is now, it just was a great joy. But looking at all of them, softball, Spanos, track and field, they've all been tremendous improvements that will help us with our recruiting. And, I'm looking forward to, the D1 athletes looking at who we are. And I know it works, because I've been around the Spanos facility, and particularly where the athletes have been in there, and some coaches we recruited have been in there, and some professional athletes that have been in there and that utilizes it. So it's one of many things that we've increased in facilities that's helping us as we move to Division I.
And what about you on a personal level? What's next for you? How much longer are you in this? What else do you want to accomplish?
Well, I'm staying at UC San Diego for as long as I can. I'm not looking at doing anything within the next, 7 to 10 years, other than lead us, because we're in a great place. So whenever I do step aside, it'll be after completing my tenure here at UC San Diego. But from a personal standpoint, where many individuals in my position would be sort of on the downside of our campus, on downside of their career, I really feel rejuvenated, a rebirth, a renaissance, because when you look at what's going to happen with us from a Division I perspective, when you look at what's happening during this renaissance period, I like to call it, with the campus, with the growth and the number of new facilities being built, the trolley running, from Chula Vista to our campus, this is a real exciting time for me. So I feel extremely rejuvenated. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. Part of that is personal, looking at the Division I, and the other part is looking at the fairness to my staff, because as we all know, as an athletic director, it's not uncommon when the new AD comes in that there's new coaches brought in, there's new staff, and I've had a great staff so far that's got us to this place in our journey, and I would feel extremely uncomfortable doing anything that would have a negative effect on their career as well.
Well, that's fantastic news for us that you'll be sticking around for a while, and on a personal level, very, very grateful for your leadership. Thanks for the time, Earl. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it very much, and looking forward to hearing the podcast, and thank you for creating this for us, because it's a timely a time for us to do this. So thank you very much.
Wow. Great stuff from Earl there. I think what really stood out to me the most was when he was talking about how athletics is so much more than just the wins. It's really an agent for social change. And I feel like we're seeing that now more than ever.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Jenny. I mean, we've seen over the years that there have been instances where scholar athletes here at UC San Diego and nationally will occasionally use their voice, but oftentimes we haven't seen that, knowing that they do have a platform available to them because of the athletic competitions. And I think right now in this period where there haven't been games and there haven't been students on campuses across the country, given the events taking place in our society and getting worldwide attention, we're starting to see student athletes around the country speak up a little bit. And it's so refreshing to see that. And Earl's exactly right. I mean, having that ability to affect change is something that, moving forward, I expect to see a lot more of that from scholar athletes here at UC San Diego and students around the country. What really struck me in my conversation with Earl really came towards the very end of our conversation when he said that he intended to be around for 7 to 10 more years. And I say that in the sense that you can totally, in chatting with him, hear the passion that he has in his voice for what he does and for the platform that he has and for what's coming next for this institution and this department as it transitions into Division I. And it's so exciting to hear that. For Earl, it wasn't a matter of, hey, I got the department to Division I, my work here is done. He knows that there's so much more that he can do, and we're certainly grateful to have his leadership.
Right. Yeah, we've been very fortunate to have Earl, with the leadership that he's had for us in the department. And it really is exciting to see where we go next. I mean, with Division I, obviously, that's going to bring a lot of new opportunities and new challenges. And so I'm looking forward to see where Earl takes us.
Yeah, you and me both. As we move ahead here on TritonCast, we'll wrap this episode up. But you want to make sure you join us next week for episode 2, which will drop on Wednesday, July 8th. A reminder that we'll have new episodes every Wednesday. We'll be joined by Jasmine Chu. And Jasmine is the director of sports dietetics here at UC San Diego. And really a fascinating conversation Jenny will have with her about what it takes to develop a nutrition program for over 600 scholar athletes and what goes into that. And also how that how she can share her recipes and her wisdom with folks while they're apart from campus. So that's certainly an interesting conversation. You're going to want to check that out next week.
Yeah, Jasmine's incredible, and it's awesome to see what she's doing for the department. And really, all of us can benefit from the recipes and everything that she's been sharing on social media.
No doubt.
Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure that you subscribe, rate, or review TritonCast on the podcast platform of your choice. And also make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at TritonCast, and feel free to email any feedback you have to TritonCast@ucsd.edu. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@ucsd.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter at TritonCast.